Welcome to Coffee with Kupke, a production of St. Paul Inside the Walls. Here on Coffee with Kupke, we grab a cup of coffee, at least we're claiming this is coffee. We sit with Monsignor Kupke, Raymond Kupke, the pastor of St. Anthony's in Hawthorne, professor at Immaculate Conception Seminary, diocesan archivist. We sit with Monsignor Kupke to delve into the history of Catholicism in the Diocese of Paterson. My name is Father Paul Manning. I am the vicar for evangelization for the Diocese of Paterson. And here I am with Monsignor Kupke. So grab your cup of coffee and let's jump right in. I'm going to take a sip. At the conclusion of our last episode, Monsignor Kupke was afraid that I was leaving Father McNulty for good and paying short shrift. So we probably have at least one and maybe more, two more episodes on Father McNulty. But we left him at the consecration after 20 years after its opening, having paid off the debt. Right. The cathedral was actually consecrated on the Feast of Peter and Paul. And we talked a little bit about the interior. Anything else you want to mention about the interior itself? Or
McNulty, the descriptions of the cathedral when it was opened was that it could hold 2,000 people.
Oh, my.
Now, I don't know
how they— You would pack them in with a shoehorn.
Well, people were smaller then. You know,
that's true. And they didn't have demands for comfort like we do.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, so they packed them in. I can't imagine putting 2,000 people in there today, but
yeah.
One of the interesting features are the windows. I spent some— when we were renovating the cathedral in 87, I spent some time on the windows, and they're beautiful German stained glass windows. And I, you know, very often windows have a pattern. For example, you were at St. Peter's when the new church was built, and the windows are all scenes from the life of St. Peter.
Yes, that was my suggestion, by the way.
So I'm, you know, we have other places like St. Bonaventure's in Paterson has all Franciscan saints in the windows. So I'm looking at the cathedral, and I'm trying to figure
out the pattern.
The pattern, and there's just no pattern. They're all over the place, you know. And finally, one day I went in and I started reading the little plaques, you know,
yes.
And basically the pattern is whoever donated the window
got the saint.
Yeah. So there's some oddities. The two windows facing Main Street are the original two, St. John the Baptist and St. Dominic, given by the St. John the Baptist Sunday School Teachers Association,
which was an enormous
operation at the time. And the other side, the Parish Rosary Society. Gave St. Dominic.
Got it, yeah.
But I've always been fascinated, you know, he could not have done this on purpose, I don't think, but the three windows that face the bishop's throne are all bishops.
Okay.
St. Patrick.
Putting the pulpit in the right place.
That's it. You know, I sit there and say, he could not have known this. He couldn't have done, but then you sit back and say, maybe he did. But St. Patrick, St. Charles Borromeo, and St. Richard of Chichester. And, you know, the men who donated, the families who donated the three windows, it was Patrick Lee and Richard
Charles
O'Neill. And,
yeah.
But, you know, you've got a famous evangelizer, a famous reformer from the Council of Trent, and a famous liturgist, you know, all facing Bishop Sweeney every time he sits down on that throne.
That doesn't sound like an accident. So Paterson is growing by leaps and bounds. You give numbers of the growth in population over the years. It's just astronomical. And pretty quickly, Father McNulty is buying properties so that other churches and other parishes can be founded.
Yeah. He just loved to build.
Yeah.
It's hard to say it any other way. You know, there is a period there of like 20 years when he has a building project going on every single year, either a new building or an addition. So he's got a couple of things. While he's building the cathedral, you know, he's got a couple of other things going on. First of all, he's beginning to set up satellite churches as downtown Patterson is beginning to spread. By the time McNulty dies, the downtown section did not have that many people living in it anymore.
It had become a business.
The cathedral had almost shrunk in size compared to some of its daughters. But he's setting out first St. Joseph's up on Sandy Hill, and then St. Mary's, and ultimately St. Agnes and St. George. There's a lovely story about St. George, the original church. They bought a public school.
Public School 9.
For years, Pattersonians referred to it as St. Ninesy's.
After the public school.
So he's building all of these churches, but not just in Patterson, because he's in charge of the area. So he built St. Luke's and Hohokus, was a mission of St. John's all the way up there in Bergen County. But then he's also building social institutions, St. Joseph's Hospital, the Little Sisters of the Poor, St. Francis Residence for Women, Mount St. Joseph's Orphanage. And, while that's all going on, he's also restructuring the Catholic education system of Patterson. So he renovates several times the St. John's Catholic school offerings. He brings in not only the charities, but also ultimately the Christian Brothers to run the boys section of what we would call today the middle school.
Yes.
And then by the time he's gone, they've with the assistance of some very sharp Sisters of Charity, they move up to a high school.
Mm.
So, he's constantly rearranging. It was very difficult to really delineate the schools of Patterson because there were so many of them.
Yeah.
There were a couple of private academies that disappeared as he's rearranging and shifting from this building to the other building.
Yeah. Now, it seems to me normally the foundation of parishes and the foundation of Catholic schools, normally that would be decided at a diocesan level by a bishop and his cabinet saying we need to do this. It sounds like he's taking a lot of initiative.
It was much more common to do that then. Yeah.
So
most of our earliest parishes really, there's no—
started their own—
There's no chancery office. There's no, maybe the bishop might occasionally, but— For the most part, it's congregations saying, we want a church here. Or a zealous pastor saying, my parish is so big, we really need a new church over here. And, McNulty was nothing if not a man of initiative. And given a blank space, he would fill it.
And I guess the chancery structure, the multiple offices and personnel in a chancery, that's a relatively—
non-existent, yeah.
Yeah, because I'm thinking, I lived with Monsignor Dennis Hayes near the end of his life, and he at one point was—
superintendent of schools and principal of Bailey Illard.
And pastor. Yeah,
all
at once. Yeah. And I think he didn't have a secretary. I think he did it all himself.
Hello, this is Bishop Kevin Sweeney of the Diocese of Patterson, and I have a new podcast called Beyond the Beacon. One of the things I love about this podcast is that I get to interview Catholics of different ages and backgrounds and learn what inspires them to live a life of faith, hope, and love. Join me on Thursdays for Beyond the Beacon, wherever you find your favorite podcasts, or watch it on my YouTube channel. Click the link in the description to learn more. Thank you, and God bless you.
Well, our diocese, this is not Newark. Newark did not build a chancery office until the 1920s.
Yeah.
But our diocese, in its origins, in 1938, when they opened the chancery, basically there were only two full-time employees.
Yeah, and that was—
the secretary to the bishop and the secretary to the school office, and that was it.
Interesting.
It was a small, small operation.
Yeah, until relatively recently.
Much later on, when we talk about the transition from Bishop McLaughlin to Bishop Boland, I'll tell you a funny story about that.
Mm.
Because Bishop Bishop Boland wanted to take the secretary with him.
Oh.
And the chancellor was horrified because she was the only one working full-time in the office. He was afraid.
Memory.
A new bishop would show up and he would not know where the paper clips were.
Yeah. That's good. So I don't know what prompted
But with McNulty, like St. Agnes Parish in Patterson starts off as a overflow of St. John's Grammar School. They had so many kids that he created like a satellite campus of the grammar school and then began saying mass there on Sundays. And that's how St. Agnes.
Okay. And St. Agnes is still there.
Yeah.
So something prompted me to write down plenary councils and ask you about I think you mentioned in some connection, the third plenary council of Baltimore making some kind of decision.
Right.
Can you talk a little bit about
this? This is 1884. So this is the big one in American history because this is the one that came up with the Baltimore Catechism.
All right, so just a word about what are plenary councils?
There were almost no councils in the 19th century. You know, the First Vatican Council is an exception. But what we would see as normal today, the annual meeting of the American bishops, the National Bishops Conference, none of that structure existed. You know, since the days of conciliarism in the 15th century, Rome did not like councils.
Okay.
So they did not let them meet. You know, there was no regional meetings of bishops, only in the rarest circumstances.
Conciliarism was a debate about the
structure of the church, basically. Right. Should it be by committee rather than one strong
supreme pontiff?
Right.
Yeah.
But the American scene was different because it was a tabula rasa. You know, there were so many things that the American bishops were facing that Rome had no template for because the whole notion of a country where there was freedom of religion alone, sent Rome. They didn't know how to deal with that. So they allowed the American bishops three times in the 19th century to get together as a national episcopate.
And did the bishops have to ask permission to do this?
Oh, yeah. And Rome assigned the president of the council.
Interesting.
Yeah.
And this was a unique
This is somewhat unique,
experience. Yeah.
So 1884 is the third plenary council of Baltimore with James Gibbons, the Archbishop of Baltimore, presiding.
Famous figure in American Catholic history.
So this is when they come
Cardinal Gibbons.
This is when they come up with the decree that every parish should have a Catholic school.
Oh.
And this is the council where they come up with the Baltimore Catechism, which was partially written by a New Jersey priest. But
do you want to mention the name?
Went right out of my head.
That. Okay.
But so as a result of this, they're beginning to look as the Eastern Diocese in particular are beginning to become more urban and more structured. So it's at this council that they decide that there should be basically diocesan boards of consultors, vicars for reign, that the larger diocese could be divided into deaneries, what we would call them today, and also that certain parishes of inestimable
worth
should be designated irremovable pastorates.
So if you
wound up in one of these, technically the bishop should leave you alone and you should be pastor there for life.
And was this in canon law or was this an American?
It was an American adaptation of canon law.
Okay, so the third plenary council says there should be vicars forain, what we know of as deans of geographical regions in the diocese. So the diocese is split up into deaneries.
Yeah, basically, you know, you can see the growth because basically the Morris-Sussex Deanery by the end of the 19th century, this is what was just one parish at the beginning of the 19th century.
You know? Morris and Sussex.
But, it had grown and there were more priests, more churches.
So is it at this time that Father McNulty gets the title?
McNulty hits the jackpot.
All right, so let's talk about that.
He is made vicar forain of Passaic and Bergen counties.
That's the
deanery.
Okay, so a vicar forain gets the title dean.
Right.
Okay,
he's also made a member of the Board of Consultors, and he is made an irremovable pastor.
St. John's irremovable pastor. That is quite a title.
It is. Yeah. I mean,
we don't really.
When you
have
think
those.
About it, it's.
Some pastors can't be moved in other ways, but anyway. So he gets
sometimes it sounds like something we should bring back, you know.
Right. So this is a guy who deserves to be an irremovable pastor.
Right,
but,
right.
So what year is this that he becomes dean?
He's like 1886, I think.
And he's going to die in 1922?
Yes.
So, oh, wow.
Yeah. No, McNulty, again, today we retire pastors at 75. Yeah. Nobody will ever beat McNulty's record because nobody lives that long or is in the saddle that
yeah,
long.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's 59 years as pastor. You know, that's more than a priest today gets, even if he gets ordained at the earliest possible age. He still is retired after 50 years.
Yeah. Can you think of other priests who took the title dean and made it? You don't really hear other priests referred to as dean, do you?
The one other, and again, not to the extent that McNulty played it out, but the dean of Morris Sussex at the time, Joseph Flynn. Flynn was the pastor of Assumption in Morristown. And unlike McNulty, who was kind of an outlier, Flynn was an inside man.
Okay.
He had been Bishop Wigger's secretary. And he is the one, you know, who wrote the first history of the Catholic Church in New Jersey.
You mentioned.
For the 50th anniversary of the Diocese of Newark. But he was made dean of Morris and Sussex, and he organized the priests of the deanery enough that they opened All Souls Hospital in Morristown. That was his.
I was born there.
Yeah, that was his initiative, you know, to produce a Catholic hospital somewhere in Morris and Sussex County.
Did they refer to him as Dean Flynn?
Dean Flynn, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So Dean McNulty becomes vicar forain and an irremovable pastor at the same time. I'm going to jump, I guess, now a little bit ahead to here he is, this important figure, building churches, building schools, in
to
cooperation
give you, to give
with
you
the
something
sisters
of an idea, you know, to put the dean's term in context. He comes to St. John's during the Civil War.
Hmm.
And is still pastor of St. John's
after
when World War One ends.
Yes.
Yeah, you know, that's a long time in American history.
Yeah. So there was a period of 2 years in which the church in Patterson faced a great trial, or two trials, right? 1902 and 1903.
Acts of God, yes. The Patterson fire and the great Patterson flood, right?
So what happened with the fire?
The fire started downtown, I think, in the railroad yards.
Yeah.
And it was in the winter, and there was a strong wind.
60 miles an hour, you said.
Yeah. And it did not look like it was going to be that bad at the outset, but then as the wind picked up and the day went on, it just kept moving. The story is that the pastor of St. Joseph's in Patterson, up on the hill, the fire was not there in the morning, but he told his parishioners to leave the church and go home and start packing because he said the wind is coming this way. And by the end of the day, his church was destroyed.
So did it decimate blocks?
Yeah, blocks of Patterson.
And churches and schools?
Everything in the way, yeah.
Wow.
It did not go over by the cathedral, but it came right up basically Broadway in Patterson today and destroyed that, you know, that whole, you know, we have a picture of St. Joseph's when it's just a shell.
It looks like bombed
and
out.
When you think that earlier that same day, they had been in there for mass. So it's hard to imagine. Yeah.
So the church encounters this great big challenge. And then within the year,
flood. Yeah.
So what happened with the?
The Passaic River overflowed, you know, one of those.
Was it wintertime again?
I don't think so. No.
Okay.
But it, one of those 100-year floods, you know, and so the whole downtown area was flooded. That didn't impact churches so much, but, you know, people certainly and businesses were badly impacted.
Yeah. But somehow.
Somehow.
The church.
They keep on going. Yeah.
And McNulty must have helped in the rebuilding process and
yes.
helping families.
Yeah. And the social service outreach from St. John's was enormous at this point.
That's what I was going to get to next, that not only was he building churches and making sure that people were receiving sacraments and that Mass was celebrated, but he in some ways, is he the foundation of Catholic Charities?
Yeah. The St. Vincent de Paul Society, particularly the cathedral, St. Vincent de Paul Society, you know, was really the beginning of what we would see as the, you know, you can trace someplace like Straight and Narrow right back through the years, you know, and see the connection links,
yeah.
you know, particularly with McNulty because he was such a bear about alcoholism.
Yeah.
The American bishops were very concerned about it. You know, this was a scourge that just came up out of nowhere. I think prior to the Civil War, I don't think alcoholism was even in the dictionary as a word. And it just, as the industrial
yeah.
revolution takes place, you know, these people are moving from farms into miserable situations, both living and working.
Yeah.
And they're paid in cash,
yeah.
you know, the weekly or monthly pay envelope.
Yeah.
So if one guy says to another, you know, why don't we just go and get a beer? You know, you could drink your entire monthly pay envelope.
Now, didn't McNulty go into taverns?
Oh, yes.
What?
You know, again, this is a place where you think that it's an exaggeration, except that it's been printed so many times that you have to think it was real. Apparently, on Friday afternoon, the women of the parish would gather on the lawn of the rectory and start praying the rosary. And then at like 5 o'clock, the dean would come out with his shillelagh in hand.
A shillelagh is the walking stick.
A walking stick, you know. And then he would nod to the ladies, and they would start this procession, and they would visit every saloon in downtown Patterson.
Wow.
And according to the descriptions, and again, it's not just one, it's multiple descriptions of this, you know, he would throw open the doors of the saloon while the ladies were outside, and, you know, the whole place would go quiet. And he would just take a shillelagh and clear an entire bar of glasses and then pick up his parishioners by the scruff of the neck, one by one, and throw them outside to their mothers, sisters, wives, daughters who were waiting, hoping that some of the paycheck had not been spent.
Yeah,
down.
Yeah.
And this was a regular, like, weekly occurrence, you know.
Wow.
He was so intent on it that at one point, the cathedral parish had 8 parish temperance societies
right.
ranked by gender and age. They have the most bizarre titles, like the Holy Thirst League and the Sacred Chalice Society. But, I mean, this is pre-AA, you know.
Yes.
You know, when most people thought that alcoholism was just a sin, they didn't see it as a chemical addiction or anything that should be treated. So he had, you know, a society for young boys and another one for high school boys and another one for young men and another one for married men. And then the same thing on the female side, which we often don't think of female alcoholism, but he was the moderator of all 8 of them himself.
We're going to leave Dean McNulty in the pub, smashing the bar with his shillelagh, continue to talk about him in the next episode. Let's leave it there. I want all of you who are listening or watching to make sure that you keep an eye out or an ear out for the next episode of Coffee with Kupke. In order to stay on top of new releases, Make sure you follow or subscribe wherever you're listening. And if you are on YouTube, please do drop a like and hit the bell for notifications. While you're at it, make sure to check out the other shows produced by the diocese. Those shows are Beyond the Beacon, hosted by Bishop Kevin Sweeney and Jay Agnish, our Director of Communications, and the Paul Street Journal, hosted by Brian Hansberger and Freddie Garcia. I want to give a special thanks to Joe Genexi, our sound and visual engineer, Caitlin Ferrari, who's involved in pre- and post-production, and Freddie Garcia, who's helping out with this podcast in addition to doing his own. With all that said, I just want to thank you for joining us in Coffee with Kupke. Keep making Catholic history in the Diocese of Patterson.